We present The Unbelievable Truth, the panel game built on truth and lies. In the chair, please welcome David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. Tonight, our panel features four individuals who are all in a vulnerable group. Out-of-practice comedians. So please welcome Henning Vane, Holly Walsh, Zoe Lyons and Richard Osman. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth, or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Holly Walsh. One of the busiest, most successful comedians in Britain is what Holly has said she'd like to be. Holly, your subject is the ancient Romans, a civilization founded around the 9th century BC that came to dominate Europe. Off you go, Holly. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
The ancient Romans invented almost all of the worst things in history, including pop-up adverts, close-up magic, battery hens, those signs people have on their walls saying live, laugh, love, best man speeches that go on for an hour, and Crocs.
Richard.
I mean, come on, there's something there, surely.
And I can tell you what.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What do you think it is?
Close-up magic.
Do you think?
This is a departure. You're just speaking in an advisory role here. But you're on Richard's team for this buzz.
I mean, listen, I have a calculation to make now, don't I?
Yeah.
Which is, do I trust Henning? I mean, listen, that was one of the things I was thinking. They might have invented pop-up adverts, I thought they might have invented. For oh, you're laughing, though. Yeah. I will say they invented close-up magic.
No, they didn't.
Oh.
Battery chicken sounds like something, because that's quite organised, isn't it? You need them sort of corralled. The Romans like doing things like that, because they did long bench toilets, and somehow in my mind I've connected that with battery chickens.
Well, I think, yes, it's a good theory, because they were organised and cruel.
Yes.
And that's what battery chicken farming is.
Also, close-up magic is fairly cruel, isn't it?
It's pretty cruel.
I hate it.
Yeah,
like, never trust a magician.
Yeah, if I'm ever at a wedding and a close-up magician comes near me, I'm like, no, go. I mean, why do I want to see somebody who didn't have any friends as a teenager doing something in my face?
But you're right, Zoe. The ancient Romans invented battery hens. They farmed many different breeds of chickens in well-designed free-range coops before moving them to fatten them up in dark, restrictive cages similar to those used in modern battery chicken farming.
So amazing at medicine were they that it was the Romans who discovered you could cure indigestion by swallowing pig eyeballs, get rid of hiccups by wearing a mouse as a finger puppet, and alleviate a headache by strapping a fox's genitals to your forehead. Three things I still do to this day, whether or not I have symptoms.
Richard.
Look, I'm going to go straight back in. One of those things.
I can't advise on this one. I've got...
Do you know what? As so often in life, I'm so tempted to say fox genitals. fox genitals?
Correct. Yes. Yes. Yes, to cure a headache, the Roman author Pliny the Elder suggests fastening the genital organ of a male fox round the head.
Popular pastimes amongst the ancient Romans included collecting souvenir mugs, swapping models of their favourite centurions like panini stickers, and painting funny little woodblocks they stuck up around their workplaces, saying things like, gladiators do it with their massive helmets, and my other chariot has winged horses.
Richard.
I think maybe that they swapped like panini sticker versions of gladiators.
No, they didn't.
No, I think, no, can I help Richard on that one?
Henning, yes.
I think they took home souvenir mugs.
Is this an official guess or just a Richard helping strategy?
Yes.
You're absolutely right, they did. The ancient Romans collected souvenir glass mugs commemorating chariot races, charioteers and gladiators. And 13 such mugs have been found in Colchester.
But, just like every other culture in the world, the ones who had it best were the women. As long as they looked good, which they all did by following a strict beauty regime. They would rub the sweat of gladiators on their faces to improve their complexions, soak their hair in the sweat of gladiators to make it stronger and more luxuriant, and wipe their feet with the sweat of gladiators to give them a better circulation. At least that's what they told their husbands when they came home smelling of gladiators.
Zoe?
I'm going to go for the gladiator conditioner. Because they had beautiful hair, didn't they? Well, the statues did. I mean, very rigid, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite a strong hairspray. Yes, yeah, yeah. It's a firm hold they're using.
They did not use the sweat of gladiators to make their hair stronger and more luxuriant.
Now you say it again, it does seem silly.
Richard?
Did they do the one about the feet, whatever that was?
No, they didn't. Okay. No, they didn't
then help
rub it
me
onto
again.
Their feet.
Help me again with the third one. What was the third one?
I think it was like skin, like they put it on their skin.
Yeah, it was the third
one. Yeah, they did do that.
Are you buzzing for that? Well, Henning, you're
right. Yeah, they did.
Wealthy Roman women bought gladiator sweat to improve their complexion. It was sold in vials outside the games. The sweat was also mixed with perfumes and was believed to increase sexual desire. So, yeah.
And that is everything you need to know about the ancient Romans who ruled the entire planet from the time of the Big Bang until 193 AD, when the entire Roman Empire was sold at auction and became known as the Disney Roman Empire.
Thank you, Holly. And at the end of that round, Holly, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is the very last one, that in 193 AD, the entire Roman Empire was sold at auction.
Wow.
This was on March the 28th, 193 AD, after the murder of Emperor Commodus. The Praetorian Guard held an auction to sell the Roman Empire. It was won by Marcus Didius Severus Julianus, who paid over 28 million drachmas for it. He became emperor briefly before he was killed and replaced by Lucius Septimius Severus. And that means, Holly, you've scored 1 point. OK, we turn now to Henning Vane. Henning has kept working throughout the pandemic and indeed is one of the few comics not to have their live shows affected by the introduction of the Rule of Six. Henning, your subject is tea, a hot drink brewed with crushed tea leaves to which milk and sugar are sometimes added. Off you go, Henning.
Tea has given British people their only way of dealing with difficult emotional situations for centuries. Before that, whenever someone had distressing news, you would have to say, "Oh no, let me go and boil some water for no reason whatsoever." Queen Victoria would rub used tea leaves over her nipples in a process called teasing. William Gladstone liked it so much that he got his wife to put it in his hot water bottle so he could drink it in the morning.
Zoe.
That sounds like a sort of prototype to the early teas made, doesn't it? A water bottle full of tea. I mean, it sounds handy.
Yeah, it's true.
Yes!
Yes, when her husband was at late-night sittings in Parliament, Mrs. Gladstone would take a stoneware hot water bottle full of tea with her to bed so that her husband could have a warm drink without a servant having to wait up when he got home in the early hours of the morning.
That's clever.
Yeah.
Tea was helped up the hot drink charts by the demise of old favourites like Hot Ribena, Bovril, Muckalucky and Saloop.
Richard.
Muckalucky.
What about it?
was an old drink.
No.
What is Muckalucky?
It says here, apparently Muckaluck is a game involving a piece of bread and a group of gay men.
You know, I just knew I'd heard of it. That's all. I just knew I'd heard of it.
But yes, no, it's not an old drink.
Saloop was a luxury drink.
Holly.
I think Saloop is a thing.
Saloop is a thing, yes. Saloop is a drink made from ground orchid tubers, and it was a popular alternative to tea in the 17th and 18th centuries until a reduction in the price of tea, together with rumours that Saloop was a cure for venereal disease, caused its popularity to wane.
I think the brand name was VD Tips, is that right?
Novelty teas were soon all the rage, and the British Empire, being good at moving dangerous substances around, soon had everyone drinking dynamite tea, heroin tea, magic mushroom tea, and, of course, tobacco tea, based on the health-giving properties of cigarettes.
Zoe.
One of those has got to be right, hasn't it? Did you say gunpowder tea?
No, but feel free
to
add it.
You said dynamite tea.
Yeah, dynamite tea, yes.
Dynamite tea, which I think is a 1980s rapper. I'm going to go for it.
You
dynamite tea.
Everyone was drinking dynamite tea.
It'll blow your mind.
It doesn't exist.
Okay,
no,
yeah.
No, no one was drinking that. Richard.
Opium tea.
Nope.
Oh.
No.
I know people who have drunk magic mushroom tea.
Mm. Oh, do you?
Yeah.
And opium tea.
Like, have you ever been to Wittard's?
Do they do a magic mushroom?
They do a magic mushroom opium blend, and it is.
I think I have been to Wittard's. I brought one of those little sort of metal balls you can put tea leaves in and use it like a sort of reusable tea bag.
Mm. Except you don't, do you? You put it in a drawer and then never use it again. Yeah.
Exactly.
Out 15 years later.
I think I can imagine how we'll all be in that old people's home that we inevitably end up in talking about Wittard's and the time we bought a ball to brew tea. And
maybe we're there already.
So have you seen Shutter Island? That's the plot of that.
Is it?
No spoilers.
What? David Mitchell ends up in an old people's home.
No, that's the plot of Would I Lie to You?
Henny.
Well, let me tell you a bit more about tobacco tea. Tobacco tea was believed to cure many ailments, including toothache, headaches, and nephritis. It also cured not being addicted to tobacco.
Holly.
I reckon that's true, that you drank tobacco tea to get away from smoking tobacco.
That's not what Henning said. He said it cured not being addicted to tobacco, by Ooh. Which he meant it made you addicted to tobacco. So that would have the opposite effect. Richard.
Can I say tobacco tea might be a true thing?
It is a true thing, yes.
Isn't that implicit in what I said?
No, you said that tobacco tea was used to...
But then I must have believed in tobacco tea to say that statement.
Yes, I know. It was
so
tricky.
So I guess
of
I get a point.
Well, no. The thing you thought was true was something that A, wasn't true, and B, Henning hadn't even said. And so it was on that basis that I didn't want to give you a point. But you're right, implicit in it was a belief in tobacco tea. And that's all Richard said in his subsequent buzz.
Yeah.
So I'm in a very difficult position now, and I think this needs to go out for independent adjudication. Mm-hmm. But there simply aren't the resources. So I'm going to have to make a decision. And, OK, I'm going to give you both a point.
Yes!
Can I? That slightly sullies the point that I got. So it feels like maybe I should get 2 points if Holly's going to get
okay,
one.
Okay.
Is all
well,
I would
you
say.
You give him the point and I get an assist.
What? What's an assist?
It's like in football when somebody makes the pass that gets the goal.
So I get 5 points for the goal and
I get
Holly
three
gets
for
three
the
points
assist.
For an assist.
Yeah, yes, for the assist.
Yeah.
I hate football. Neither of you are getting a point.
In World War II, the British government believed their tea made you more alert and aggressive. As a result, it bought more tea by weight than ammunition during the war.
Richard.
Is it true that the British Army bought more tea by weight than ammunition?
Correct.
What?
Yes. In order to boost morale amongst the troops during World War II, the British government bought up all the black tea available in Europe. It's reported that at any given time during the war, there were at least 30 million tons of tea in Britain. Some historians believe tea was Britain's secret weapon during the war, as it united the nation and reminded troops of home. But I would say the explosives are probably more effective. Henny.
Although there is only one species of tea, you can alter the taste by adapting the sounds it absorbs. For example, a study in 1987 at the Twinings Institute found that plants grew 20% higher when played It's My Life by Dr. Alban.
I think there's something in that. Yes.
The plants grew 20% higher when played It's My Life by Dr. Alban.
Yes.
No.
Now, after all this talking about tea, who fancies a cuppa?
Thank you, Henning. Well, at the end of that round, Henning, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is that there is only one species of tea. Oh. All tea comes from the same plant, Camellia sinensis. Other plants commonly referred to as tea, such as chamomile, peppermint and rooibos, are not actually tea. And that means, Henning, you've scored 1 point! Next up is Zoe Lyons. Zoe, your subject is crustaceans, mainly aquatic animals with bodies typically covered by a hard shell or crust. Off you go, Zoe.
Known as the catwalk models of the seafloor, crabs walk sideways as they are incredibly vain crustaceans that have evolved to believe they look more attractive to a prospective partner in profile. These creatures are so preoccupied with their looks that they hold an annual Miss Crustacean Beauty pageant, which takes place every year in Ocean City, New Jersey. The swimwear round is the most hotly contested, but participants also score points for volunteering with the elderly and being able to play a musical instrument.
Henny.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was a Miss Crust, one of them things, win a prize for looking tasty.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. Yes, every year since 1976, Ocean City, New Jersey has hosted the Miss Crustacean Beauty Pageant for Hermit Crabs. Asked to explain the event's longevity, a spokesman for the pageant said, "It makes no sense, it has no redeeming social value, and offers no prize money."
Was he talking about this show?
In Zanzibar, it is considered a huge compliment to say that someone has eyes like a horny lobster. This is because lobsters' eyes can almost triple in size during their mating season. Reflectors used on the roads in that country are actually called lobster eyes.
Holly.
Yeah.
Lobster eyes. No, it's not true, I'm afraid.
I mean, when you think about it, Holly, they'd have to be on stalks, so... over them, wouldn't
that they? Could be what they call those, you know, the lights that you get over motorways.
Lampposts.
Oh, yeah. Lampposts.
Yeah. No, it could be, but it's not.
I'm going to call them that from now on.
Oh, the lobster eyes have come on.
The Scandinavians are so obsessed with prawns that the firstborn son in Norwegian families was traditionally presented with a preserved prawn on a necklace. In Sweden, something of rare value is said to be worth its weight in prawn's teeth.
Holly.
Yeah.
Prawn's teeth.
Yeah. Wait,
no. No. It'd be a good expression, though, because I don't think they have teeth, do they?
OK, I'm going to go with the one before, that the firstborn gets a little prawn round his neck.
You're double buzzing?
Yeah.
OK.
I've got nothing to lose now.
Yeah, that's not true either. So, you lose a point.
The Swedish equivalent of being born with a silver spoon in your mouth is having slid in on a shrimp sandwich. Hermit crabs are actually fish that have just managed to get a foot on the housing ladder.
Richard.
Shrimp sandwich.
Correct. Well spotted. Yeah. In Swedish society, shrimp was regarded as an upper-class food item, hence the idea that someone who appears not to have had to work to get where they are might be described as having slid in on a shrimp sandwich.
A world shortage of suitable shells for hermit crabs to move into has seen crabs staying at home in their mum and dad shells up until their 30s. When a single new shell washes ashore, the crabs will line up from the biggest to the smallest and exchange shells and pray that they won't get gazumped at the last minute. Older hermit crabs like to downsize with their advancing age and prefer flatter shells without stairs and manageable gardens.
Holly.
I think older ones do downsize.
No, they don't. I think they just die.
Well, they die. They die in the shell, and people don't find them for days.
They die in their biggest shell.
Yeah. They get eaten by their own cats.
They're unable to shrink.
Well, they do, though, don't they?
What?
Everything gets smaller as it gets older.
I don't think that's true. I mean, trees definitely don't.
Yeah. They turn into logs.
It has actually been rumoured that Banksy was originally going to go by the name Mr. Barnacle D. And Bram Stoker claimed to have had the idea for Count Dracula after a crab supper gave him nightmares.
Holly.
I reckon that's true about Banksy.
Well, he was going to be Mr. Barnacle D?
Yeah.
You really don't care anymore.
Yeah, go on. Mr. Barnacle D.
No, it's not true, I'm afraid.
No, but what was the actual sentence?
It has actually been rumoured that Banksy was originally going to go by the name of Mr. Barnacle D.
It was rumoured.
There were rumours.
You just started that rumour.
Also...
OK. But at the time that Zoe said that...
She started the rumour, and you reiterated it. This is how rumours work. No. You hear it from one person, someone else says it, we've all heard it.
Before you know it, we'll be on national radio.
For it to... For it to be a rumour, someone has to have said it, and at least one other person has to have reiterated it.
That's exactly what's been happening.
But
not at the point you buzzed. At the point you buzzed, she had said it, only her. It wasn't a rumour yet. It became a rumour as a result of your buzz, and therefore, I'm not... Richard, I will come to you in a moment. It became a rumour only after your buzz and because of your buzz. So at the point
I'm going to refer you to my lawyer.
At the point of your buzz, it wasn't a rumour, therefore it wasn't true, therefore you lose a point. Richard?
Yeah, I've heard two times now that he was going to be called.
Yeah, it's a rumour now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Richard gets a point. Right.
Thanks, Holly. Yeah.
Zoe.
French poet Gérard de Nerval overcame the strict no cats or dogs policy of his apartment block in Paris and acquired a lobster, which he took for walks on a lead. He is reported to have said that the animal was a perfect pet, as it didn't bark.
Henning.
That is a fact.
It is a fact, as it happened. Well done. Yes, Gérard de Nerval, a French romantic poet, acquired a lobster and named it Thibault. It's believed that he even walked it on a leash of blue ribbon through the Palais Royal Gardens in Paris. Nerval suffered various periods of mental instability during his lifetime, including a diagnosis of insanity in 1841. Thank you, Zoe. And at the end of that round, Zoe, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that when a single new shell washes ashore, hermit crabs will line up from the biggest to smallest and exchange shells. And the second truth is that Bram Stoker claimed to have had the idea for Count Dracula after a crab supper gave him nightmares. And that means, Zoe, you've scored 2 points. It's now the turn of Richard Osman. Your subject, Richard, is balls, spherically shaped objects that are commonly hit, thrown or kicked in a game. Off you go, Richard.
Ball is one of the most common surnames in England. Michael Foot's wife had the maiden name Ball, so he should have been called Michael Foot Ball.
Henning.
Yeah, Ball is one of the more common English surnames.
OK. This wasn't a truth that Richard was given. Ball ranks 129th in English surnames.
Yeah, but out of about God knows how many. But I mean, there's even an English World Cup winner called Ball, and there isn't many English World Cup winners, so...
OK. Well, I'm going to go to the audience on this in a sort of departure from the format.
It's probably worth asking if there's anyone with a surname Ball, because there's probably about 129 people in the audience.
Any balls in?
Yeah, are there any balls in?
Yes.
Yeah!
One ball. we're like Hitler. But do you think, as an audience, that being the 129th most common surname makes it one of the most common surnames? If you think it does, clap now. And if you think it doesn't, clap now. I'm sorry, Henning. The louder
democracy
clap came second.
Democracy once again let everyone down. Yeah.
The following is a list of genuine hip-hop artists. Big balls, little balls, medium balls. Blue balls, red balls, golden balls, ox balls, yak balls, and buffalo balls. former Taoiseach Charles Hockey's wife had the maiden name Ball, so he should have been called Charles Hockey Ball.
Holly.
Little balls.
How dare you?
You're going back to the list of hip-hop artists.
Little balls.
No, it's not true. Zoe.
I think that Taoiseach's wife's name was Ball.
No, her maiden name was Lamas.
The massive ball. <Still abandoned. laughs>
You were definitely a school bully, weren't you?
Richard.
Westminster Abbey has a cleric called Cannonball, and there is a football in the painting of The Last Supper. It is illegal to use a white golf ball in Iceland. In fact, it is illegal to use a golf ball in almost all frozen food stores.
Zoe.
It could be illegal because it's dangerous and golf is rubbish. So dangerous and rubbish, it's like the double whammy.
You make a strong case for it, but it isn't illegal.
Okay. No.
It may be good practice.
Feel free to warm your balls up before a game of golf, but it is against the rules to warm them up during. Until the 1950s, basketballs had to be made in the Basque region. Squash balls used to be orange. Table tennis balls used to be edible, and tennis balls used to be black, until David Attenborough suggested yellow instead.
Holly.
That's true. David Attenborough, that's true.
It is true. What? Yes. Tennis balls were originally white or black until the dawn of colour television. Sir David Attenborough was controller of BBC Two in 1967 when Wimbledon was first broadcast in colour and says he was the first to suggest introducing yellow balls as the white balls were hard for viewers to make out on a colour screen. It took a further 14 years before Wimbledon finally decided to heed Sir David's advice.
And we're making the same mistake again, aren't we? With global warming.
Yeah.
The highest ever bounce achieved by a rubber ball was over 60 metres. But if you were looking for a nice Christmas present for a small child, a steel ball will actually bounce higher than a rubber ball.
Henning.
I mean, can I see something bouncing up 60 metres if it's dropped from high enough? Just, yes. Did anyone bother ever to chuck one out a plane?
You've fully put your interior monologue onto speaker, haven't you?
Nothing I say.
I thought there'd be more going on in there than this.
Listen, at least he's not planning anything. You know?
No, I'll tell you what. 60 metres. There you go.
The highest ever.
Up 60 metres.
No, there's no record of that. And that's the end of Richard's lecture. And at the end of that round, Richard, you've managed to smuggle four truths past the rest of the panel, which are that there is a genuine hip-hop artist called Yak Balls. The second truth is that Westminster Abbey has a cleric named Canon Ball. The Reverend Anthony Ball was installed as a canon of Westminster in 2016. The third truth is it is against the rules to warm balls up during a game of golf. The rules of golf dictate that golf balls may be warmed prior to a round, but not during. And the fourth truth is that a steel ball will actually bounce higher than a rubber ball. And that means, Richard, you've scored 4 points. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with -8 points, we have Holly Walsh. In third place, with -2 points, it's Zoe Lyons. In second place, with 0 points, it's Richard Osman. And in first place, with an unassailable 1 point, it's this week's winner, Henning Vane. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Holly Walsh, Richard Osman, Zoe Lyons and Henning Vane. The chairman's script was written by Dan Gaster and Colin Swash and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production for BBC Radio 4.